Good evening, everyone. Wednesday night, we're back at it. We took last week off. This is the hidden work. And in this course, we are studying the works of E.J. Gold. And this particular arc of our study is the book called The Hidden Work. The Hidden Work was first written, published in 1991 by the Institute. And we're really kind of fortunate, aren't we? We're fortunate that we, from time to time, some really good stuff happens. Around us. And, you know, I took a week off. I was traveling a bit. And I got back and I realized one of the really good things that happened is the friendships that I have been able to forge with the individuals that meet on Wednesday nights and the individuals that are here around on this class. And so we're able to use this as a focus, the study of this book. So there's two things that go on. One is that we uncover this information, and at the same time, we're learning to work together. So, excuse me. One of the things that has occurred is that last 9 weeks prior, we studied one chapter and one chapter only, and that chapter was chapter 12. The reason is, to recap, chapter 11 of the book called The Hidden Work by E.J. Gold contains a unique prayer in it. At the end of chapter 11 is the prayer called the Prayer Absolute. And in that prayer, it's a nine-line stanza that exemplifies many, many, many things. Among others, it is an example of how the octave works. And the octave is a passage of energy. And that passage of energy is exemplified in that prayer. However, the prayer itself is such that we don't need to know the technical mechanics of the octave, though we did discuss it during that chapter 12. But what's important is to start to make some of the material second nature to you. Second nature to you as you walk and breathe. We've been on a long, I looked at the website the other day. The website for this material is thewingsofchaos.com. And on there, there are many chapters relating to HVM, Joy of Sacrifice, now the Hidden Work. There's a lot of material that we've gathered over the last 4 years. And now we're on a book that I consider to be a critical book in this effort. This is, in my opinion, the third book of the trilogy, where we learn the mechanics of the human biological machine in that book, The Human Biological Machine as a Transformational Apparatus. Then we learn in Life in the Labyrinth a little bit about the essential self. Now, the hidden work then says, okay, what do you do now? What do you do now? And what it says is, let's take and hold in our hands this prayer. It's a book about prayer. The whole book, okay? A few hundred pages, about a nine-line prayer. So chapter 12, we spent so much time on because it unpacks what is in that prayer. We spent a lot of time, beginning to work in terms of how to incorporate that. I am a pragmatist. My background is philosophy. I started college as a philosophy major, and it just didn't work for me as something to do. So I I left and did other things. But I realized that when you're reading some of this material, the question becomes, how then do you apply it to your life for transformational purposes? And I found that material to be in a lot of the material that we're working with E.J. Gold's books here. So my question to you is, how are you applying this? Are you applying this? I had a wonderful meeting with, I don't know if Path World, is Path World on tonight?
I haven't seen her in the...
Not yet. So Path World and I were meeting a couple of years ago down in Southern California, and I was talking at the time, I was very taken with the exercise, the door exercise in Practical Work on Self, and the concept of passing from one space to another, and the idea of transit. And she just said, she looked at me, she said, well, gosh, I forget to do it. Well, as that's the case, that you forget to do it. And why do we forget to do it? Because the balance of the human biological machine is so powerful in our lives. And gradually we introduce this ever so subtle, you know, sheen, really. It's a sheen of life that is with us now. It's our second electrical body called the essential self. So you have one that's busy, active, powerful, called the human biological machine, and then mirroring that is the essential self, which is quiet. And in itself, it has no desire as such. It's not functioning in the same manner. Its function has, it only has two attributes. Do we remember what those attributes are? Attention and so we've been working specifically on voyaging so that we are in that space more and more and more often. And why? So it's gaining a little bit more weight. So it has slightly more weight because we start off and the human biological machine has so much more weight, we don't even notice the essential self. And then things happen and it comes a little bit alive and a little bit alive. And how lucky and fortunate are we tonight that we are actually here meeting together? Think of that, huh? How many people are on the planet now? A couple hundred thousand, something like that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, more or less.
More or less. And we have found that we have enough juice that we get to meet together. All right? And gradually, truth be told, it actually happens that the transfer does take place. And when the transfer takes place, we are walking embodiment. And a great transport mechanism, that's what I look at this as, the transport mechanism is the prayer absolute. So let's just refresh ourselves, okay, so we can remember what this prayer absolute is that I'm carrying on about here, right? I brought books. I was going to read from the Talmud, but Ivan's not here, so we don't have the weight of him. Anyway, that's all. I just wanted to remind us and focus us in on where we've been and to try to recall back into the position of where we are. So we'll speak very lightly here, okay, very quietly. Mm-hmm. But let's all of us and everybody that's here too, if you can recall, why don't we say the prayer together just ever so gently, okay? Now let's... It is happens to be in the book, chapter 11, on page 113 at the bottom. Okay? Why don't you take that? Okay, so I'll start it out, and we'll just begin, and I'll begin, and then let's all just intone it, but actually say it out loud. It can be very quietly, but actually verbalize it. So air comes out of the mouth, and we'll see where we go. And if you're ready for that, then begin. And in motion bowing, my presence comes to thee. Humbly, with heart alive, my presence awakens to thee. With clear mind, my presence comes to know thee. With pity for thy suffering, my presence becomes aware of thee. With yearning, my presence wishes to comfort thee. In ignorance, my presence serves thee. In contemplation, my presence recognizes how to serve thee. In mystery, my presence is a comfort to thee. In form and formlessness, my presence becomes thee. So that's the job before us.
That changes the space just reading it.
It changes the space just reading it because we have a chance in a moment right then to focus on our essential self. And then what becomes central is not the human biological machine, but rather the essential self. And thus we are here. And now that we're here, we can begin the class. Right?
Nice.
So, I've lost my place. I'm going to read a little, there's a book I'm going to read from. It's called The Chosen by Chaim Potok. And this is about two young men, both ardent Jews. One is a Hasidic Jew, and the other is Orthodox. And they have conflicts and so on and so forth, but they're both brilliant minds. And so, for instance, the Sabbath is of great importance to them. And the one boy invites the other boy over to his home, and his father is the rabbi. His father is what's known as a tzaddik. This is like the spiritual leader of his people. He's a man of presence. And of great, great, great learning. And in the tradition of the Hasidim, they battle over Torah, and they study what's in it and what's the meaning there, and they dig it out one to another. And I'm just going to read one line of Reb Saunders is the name of this rabbi. And he's beginning to quote something, and I'll go very slowly, and we'll catch up on it. And he goes, "The great and holy Rabban Gamaliel taught us the following. Listen carefully. Do his will as if it were thy will, that he may do thy will as if it were his will." is that not what we've been talking about then? Because we talk about this idea of reaching up and being a portal really for the absolute. But we can only do that when we prepare the vessel, right? And we are preparing the vessel. That's what we're doing. The purpose, the duty before us is not, the duty before us has to do not with our own gain, however. And to exemplify that point, I'm going to read another favorite quote of mine from
Hey, Dave, Pathworld wanted you to read that other passage first, again, for a second time.
Read it for a second time?
Yeah.
Okay. It's very short, so we'll just go over it real quickly. Do his will as if it were thy will, that he may do thy will as if it were his will. So what Gamaliel is saying there, he's indicating if we can become, as it says in the last line of the prayer absolute, if we can become in form and formlessness, my presence becomes thee. My presence becomes thee. Then I am a portal such that there is a way, some way that the absolute can then be on this earth, because it otherwise is impossible. Does this make sense?
Mm-hmm.
It's impossible. We give that to a chance. We'll talk about more in chapter 14 and 15, but right now for this point is that if we can begin to achieve this, which we have begun to so achieve, then it becomes a portal, and it, as it were, as to quote Miles Spinoza, as it were, see through the eyes of God, because we have become such men. But our vessels are very, very, very crusted over with our historical personality. They're just crusted. We can barely see out our own eyes and see outside ourselves, can we?
Mm-mm.
Almost, it's so hard, because most of the time we're just thinking of ourselves. We're so frightened and encapsulated. But, so saith the sage, you have the right to work, but for the work's sake only. You have no right to the fruits of work. Desire for the fruits of work must never be your motive in working. Never give way to laziness either. Perform every action with your heart fixed on the Supreme Lord. Renounce attachment to the fruits. Be even-tempered in success and failure, for it is this evenness of temper which is meant by yoga. Work done with anxiety about results is far inferior to work done without such anxiety. In the calm of self-surrender, seek refuge in the knowledge of Brahman. They who work selfishly for results, Bhagavad Gita. So that's the issue that's posed to us. Because it's always we have this horrible, horrible pressure. Like, how do you pray? How do you actually pray? And I always, I've said this many times, that I really liked the honesty of Reverend Ike from Los Angeles in the 70s. Reverend Ike was very straightforward. He says, pray for your treasures on earth now. He says, pray for that Cadillac. Pray for that house that you want and those riches. Yeah, I like that because at least he was honest about it. But it is very difficult to stand in such a place when you invoke the prayer and you do not have, can you be in the moment of invocation and not have desire, as indicated in the Bhagavad Gita? Can you stand in that moment of just pure duty? And that requires, as indicated, a form of surrender. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
There you have it. I'll get us started.
Thank you.
And Tamara is saying there's only two prayers that she's considering at the moment. One is, help me, help me, help me. And the other one is, thank you, thank you, thank you.
She's saying that's what most people do.
And that's the
prayer. Those are the two prayers that are rampant.
Aria online.
No.
There was an incident, and sometimes people just don't know anything else to do. They just don't know. It doesn't occur to them. It isn't presented to them. They don't know another way of proceeding. They hear something, they go to Catholic, they go whatever, Baptist, and they pray because they're taught how to pray by those that came before them. But to find this incredible middle ground that we're being presented with in this literature is staggering. And the work that we do is just to do that duty. And once we do the duty, as we're able to do the duty, then maybe we'll know what to do with it. All right? Now, this is chapter 13, and I've just been rambling on here, but chapter 13, we take a kind of a sidestep for a moment. It isn't really a sidestep. It's a critical step, and the chapter 12 is very loaded with theory and importance.
But chapter 13
then stops us and says, let's look a different way.
David, sorry, your picture is gone. You are not communicating.
Picture's gone, okay.
Blackout.
Is the voice coming through on the microphone?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Can you hear it through your computer?
No. I can hear you on the phone.
But not the computer.
Do
you know how to reset it?
And now I can't hear the phone.
Refresh.
Well, I can hear you. Fine.
Okay, I can hear you now.
Yeah. It looks like the... The system is down on this end. So it's just us kids.
Do the people online, even though their picture is gone, are they still on chat?
We are.
Okay.
Type in that the system's down and we're rebooting.
Yeah, chat is working.
And the stuff, the phone line is still up and running.
But the computer audio, I don't hear.
Yeah.
Okay, I think the whole thing is down, George. I think we've lost it.
But if we still have people on the chat, if they haven't gone away, then we can still carry on with them.
Well, Lost Horizon's trying to reboot.
Okay. You just won't have a chance to...
Yeah, but they are not listening to you, only us in the phone.
The audio is not coming through on the computer.
Oh, I see.
They can hear us because they're hearing it through the phone system.
Oh, I see. Okay. So they can chat, but they don't know what they're chatting about.
Tiondro says he's watching an advertisement on Honda at the moment.
Oh.
Well, focus, Tiondro, focus.
That might be a good sign.
Good to hear you, see
that's
right.
Back up.
Now, there's the four-pag image.
Yeah, when we get started again, we'll start in on the chapter itself.
It's interesting. I mean, it's good to bring a lot of sources.
It's important for me, and I need to say, meet with EJ on this at some point, is want to show how, his literature is important to what's going on, the part of the dialectic in all of that literature.
Mm-hmm.
David, are you still there?
I'm still here, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Susan?
Susan, are you still there?
How many people are?
Yes, I'm here.
I
really liked reading that poem together.
Oh, good. Good.
Kind of brings it alive in
it
yet
does.
Another way. Every time I work with it, something else comes out.
Good.
So we're working on rebooting now. We have our professional.
Susan, can you speak to that point when we get back on?
Sure.
That was something I forgot I wanted to ask is, how has your work been with the Prayer Absolute during this two-week period?
Right. Yeah, I had to...
Would you please? What has been your experience with Prayer Absolute during the two-week absence?
You're back on the air.
Okay. Is the audio working too? Thank you.
The audio is on.
Okay. Okay, good.
Okay.
So we're back up and running again.
And Tamara typed that question in?
Yeah.
I didn't put the question in.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, put the question in.
Okay.
Tamara is typing a question into this chat, just posing the question, what has your experience been with Prayer Absolute during the last 2 weeks? We've given a number of exercises, some people have spoken, and Susan, I think, would you like to take a shot at that question, Susan?
Sure. I just started out by saying that how I really liked reading the poem together as a group and how that brought yet more of it to life for me. I did have an experience this week with I would start my day with the Prayer Absolute and, you know, put myself in a positive space and really try to be aware of being of benefit to all and everybody.
Yes, speak more into the phone, Susan.
Okay.
There you go. Perfect.
And so, you know, I'd go through the day and I would like three separate times I found that I said something. I mean, wait, that was not really a benefit. And
did you say it did something that was not of benefit?
That it was not of benefit.
Uh-huh.
I just, in my normal life, would do something a certain way, and when my focus was on being of benefit and just setting the day with the stage of that really changed it. And I was so aware of, like, you know, the thing, like I made one decision. We were with a group of people and it was just about meeting somewhere. And I realized there was no way to be of benefit to all of the factors. So there had to be kind of a lot of compromise.
Okay.
And so being of benefit to some people meant that other people were inconvenienced.
What do you mean by being of benefit?
Well, that was a big, I mean, that changed for me over the couple of days I was doing this exercise.
Okay, good.
Of trying to figure out, well, what is truly of benefit? And how are we supposed to know?
Some of us have had that conversation about that very point. Like, how can I best be of benefit? Let's say, how can I best be of benefit to my daughter who lives in New York City? So on one hand, I can do things like, I can send her a couple of bucks every month, help her with her rent, right? That's being a benefit, correct?
Yeah. Money from dad, sure.
Yeah, we can measure it. And then everybody agrees, gosh, helping your kid out, that's a good thing, right?
Yeah.
No question about it.
Lucky kid.
Lucky kid.
I'd like to get on that list.
Yeah, I'd like to get on that list, too.
Georgia, you cut out there, Georgia. I didn't hear you at all. And so there's that. You know, that's one form, and that's easy. You know, you get brownie points for that and stuff like that. But what's another way? What's the best way I could be of benefit to her?
To be there and talk to her.
Be there and talk to her, Susan said.
I mean, not physically be there, but you can, you know, talk on the phone and still be a part of her world.
Part of her world.
Listen to the stories of the new life and maintain a connection.
Maintain a connection. What did Tamara say?
Tamara's saying to be there.
Well, to
continue to work on your own
consciousness.
Your own consciousness.
And maintain.
And to maintain an attitude of openness.
So to the extent that I can be more in my presence and essential self, then I might know something about being of service to her.
Mm-hmm. You can maintain your own presence and attention.
Yeah, there was a story that Aria told a few months ago about where she went to an event with, I think it was old school chums, or maybe it was old people she used to work with or something like that. And she was surprised how fluid her conversations were. And then she realized she was different. I met with somebody today, and she was saying that she has these complex money problems, and they're all centered around her father. And she was quite worried because her father just passed away a month ago. How could she then work them out, she said. I said, well, I'm not sure, but if you can free yourself, you provide a moment of freedom for those that you're associated with. And if you can provide that moment of freedom for those individuals, it's a catalyst. Yeah.
For me,
Tamara is saying that for her this week, the way she's been working with prayer. In that expression where you say, may this be used for the benefit of all beings everywhere.
The this,
and she's pointing to herself.
I'm seeing as
her body, her being, her expression, that's what she's saying, this.
So that aspect of the ground, this be used for the benefit of all beings.
So that attitude of surrendering, she's saying, may this be used for the benefit of all beings everywhere. In other words, her consciousness, her enlightened self, her remembrance, and her hands and her back, all the parts. I'd like to kind of add something to that,
yeah.
And go back to something that Susan said. I've never used prayer absolute in its form as being meant towards another person. I've always thought it was a conversation between me and God. I've never kind of put that out towards other beings, except for myself when I say, may this be used for the benefit of all beings everywhere, where I'm being very specific about who I'm directing my beingness to. But prayer absolute, I've always taken it to be a very holy conversation between me and the Supreme, whoever.
But we are them.
Yeah.
We become them.
Yeah. What's that?
We become thee. You
yes.
Are, you are conversing with God.
What did she say? I didn't hear that.
Say it again, please, Susan.
Oh, I said you are conversing with God.
Yeah. Yes, that's... But then you were saying that when you were working with it, that you found you were not of benefit to others.
Well, like in a particular thing that I said, just
yeah,
kind of asleep, and I just said this thing. And I realized, wait a minute, that wasn't really a benefit to this situation and the people in that moment. So it was just I noticed it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I like the idea that you check it out on all levels. I think that's great. You know, however you use it, I think that's what EJ put it out there for.
Well, and
you know,
I went about my day, and I really just was my intent was to be of benefit to all beings everywhere and then just kind of see what happens with the day. I didn't have any other preconception.
The grand experiment, huh?
Well, it is.
Yeah.
And the more that we carry on the experiment, the more it'll have a place within.
Mm-hmm.
And if there is real estate that you can gain within, then something's possible. And the only way to do it is practice. But we're forming a different practice than we've ever used before. This is not necessarily an external practice where we're learning how to juggle or do magic tricks or read poetry. We're learning how to maintain an inner stance throughout. So when I was talking to this person today at lunch, on the one hand, my ego was very, you know, happy to try to think of important things to say. But then when I really clicked into something, it's when I stopped all of this and I just went to presence. I knew what that felt like. I knew exactly what it was like. And when I was in that position, then something could happen. And I guarantee you, she took that away, that she has that now.
It's very powerful. When you just go into the simple beingness of presence and attention, it can really be a powerful space changer.
It's the most powerful thing we can do as individuals, is to be in our own presence. And when you are in that space, there's a form of creativity that will come out that may allow for something different. And in that way, there may be something that gets helped. The interesting thing, it may not come out of your mouth. It may come out of the mouth of someone who you're with. And it only comes out of their mouth because your presence helped them connect with their essential self. And so you go away the uncredited author of that particular event.
You have a book, right, in that space.
Well, and another way I explain it to myself is, in the absence of presence, if we do not have personal presence, then all of our actions and all of our manifestations are fundamentally unconscious, mechanical, automatic. As we strive to acquire personal presence, that presence becomes the originating source of our subsequent manifestations, which become increasingly conscious. And so we're able to manifest the absolute much more accurately.
And if at that moment something, as they say, I hate to say it because it invokes all the Christian stuff in everybody, but as they say, at that moment there is a very small possibility that then the hand of God can move, because it's in that moment of connectivity with the void and the absolute that then something else can come through and make itself available to those in that invocation. They don't necessarily need to know that they're part of the invocation either, but they are. Simon?
I have a couple of comments here that will come from before regarding the experiences. Mark says, mostly I had an awareness of the first two lines from the prayer. And mostly an attention on going with the flow and an awareness of what is emerging in the situation and flowing with that, rather than imposing my ego or will on the situation.
Let's stop there for just a moment. One of the things that then Mark is doing, is he focused, for whatever reason, focused on the first two lines. So let's say you take something like that, you know, in motion bowing, my presence comes to thee, and you really get into that. Maybe that's all you get into, is just that line. There's so much there. And you can just feel the power of surrender in that moment. So he worked in that way with those first two lines, you know, humbly with heart alive. And you begin to get a sense of, these are enormous concepts, the idea of humbly.
Humbleness is not something that we practice.
We generally don't practice that in the Western world, and it is not a passive state. That's a good point. So thank you for that, Mark, and thank you for reading that, Simon. So go ahead.
Our Hog Lady says that, I would say that first thing in the morning, too, regarding to what Mark said, I guess, I would say that first thing in the morning and before bedtime, it would help me be more present in the moment.
Okay.
Then, regarding to what Susan was saying, Mark expands, EJ's blog today was interesting, saying the focus is not about helping the planet, but that Earth is useful for the transdimensional capabilities that it provides.
Yeah, I don't know if you had a chance to read that blog on, I think it's on Gorbag's World, it's called. But there he had an extensive discussion of what is our work. And even in reading the things that we're doing from these various things, our work is not to fix the planet. The one thing we do know is that we are here. We have found ourselves on this planet, and what can we do? Right? And one of the things that we can do is that a bit of certainty is develop presence.
Right.
That's not any of, I didn't remember that from high school. I must have forgotten. Go ahead, Simon.
Mark is putting, the reason for focus on those two lines is because they are easy to remember, he's laughing. Even though I have the rest written down and carried it in my pocket. But it seems
very
to be a good memory for him.
Just a comment on Mark's thing again. One of the things that I find, now that the prayer is so active in me and right now with us, is that I find the prayer coming to me. You know what I mean? It's like I'll see an incident called humbly with heart alive.
So you've ramped up your attention on that by saying the prayer.
I walk around on my tiptoes because I don't know what's going to happen next. And I'm carefully scoping, and then suddenly this hits me. Mm. Okay?
Yeah.
Got to be careful out there. Go ahead, Simon.
No, that's it. That's it.
Wasn't Path World had something?
That world was saying that there's more coincidences occurring, according to Dan reading the chat.
Yeah, I wrote about more coincidences that happen, says Path World. That was a previous reference, too. She noticed more coincidences, too, as
and
she is practicing the prayer.
You will find that more and more as you allow yourself to be aware of the fact that we are in a karmic eddy of energetics. And in that particular pool that we find ourselves in, we will see a particular form of coincidence that the more you open your eyes to it, the more miraculous it becomes. Not magic. That sense, it's a magic in another sense. Very good comment.
That is our square centimeter of good luck, David, isn't it?
Well, that's right. And it's, you know, what do we mean by good luck?
Of chance, I mean.
You know, we think that, oh yeah, he's lucky or she's lucky. Or how lucky? Well, yeah and no. But sometimes you put yourself in a position where what should be happening is happening for you.
When you're in the flow of what's going on, then you just hit the stride, and it seems like, what a lucky person. But they're just in the flow.
I remember that being called right action.
So it's right action. And you can sense that when you're in right action. I don't know if there are very many professional basketball players on tonight. Not many.
I played basketball before.
She said she's heard of basketball.
I got to play in Kezar Pavilion one time.
You may have a professional. I don't know. But they talk about being in the zone when they're in a certain level of skill, that they wind up in the zone.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm talking about. Our zone is a little different than a 3-point shot from the head of the top of the key.
Yeah, but we're getting close. we're working our way there.
I would think even when I was catering weddings, I mean, if you're in the flow and in the zone, it goes really good.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Now, let's talk about that for a minute. It's a good point. Part of our job as invocants, and we all live in different parts of the country, and some of us work together with other groups and things like that, but part of our job is to also notice an aberration to the particular flow. We got into this a little bit in Life in the Labyrinth, also in Joy of Sacrifice, which I call a malaprop. I was down with somebody in Southern California, and we were having breakfast. We went out for breakfast. And so she's showing me this like really special super place for breakfast, right? So we go to this place, and it's all right. But I sit down, and we had a whole big outside area, and I realized something was off. Whatever the hell I meant by that, right? But I went with it. And as we were unwinding ourselves, and this is going to, there's certain people that won't like what I'm about to say, but we were unwinding ourselves, a bunch of people came in with dogs. Turned out that you could have your pet dog with you at your table. And that was okay. I mean, that's how people like that and
mm-hmm.
enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't properly schooled in that particular form of eating. So, you know, and it was news to this individual, too. But so be it. We won't talk about pets. That's too big a hurdle for most of us.
So it threw you off?
I left.
Oh, you left. Yeah.
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 I said, so when we're in a space, and this is an exercise that if...
We note that our local sure resident dog just moved away from David. Went late someplace else.
So if you have a chance to do it with others, or like even like Susan when she was with that group of individuals, nobody else there may have been in the same exercise she was. But the key is noting what I'm going to call aberrations in this space, where it's not, where a particular action doesn't appear appropriate. Does this make sense to people? Yeah.
But
yeah.
David,
yeah.
Could you please expand what you say, not appropriate? What does it mean to you that?
Okay. This requires you to, the development of your sensing mechanism, which you and we have been working on for years now, Simon, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And your sensing mechanism, like right now there's a particular mood, there's a particular invocation. And that invocation that's happening right now has a particular tone to it. Yeah?
Okay.
Yes, no, maybe so, Simon?
Yes, totally. Yes. Totally, yes.
Yes, no question about it. As a musician, if you're looking at that, and Simon is, you'll notice when someone's out of time, out of off key,
mm-hmm.
or going the wrong way. It's the same sensing that we bring to a space. Like,
yeah.
And it's, in other words, I'm saying, use a different steering mechanism when you're out and about.
Yeah.
If you can do it with another voyager, someone that maybe lives close to you, do it together, then you can actually point out things to each other. As you walk through the day, as you walk the earth, you can notice this. That's a new favorite phrase of mine.
Didn't we see David Bisbee?
So the word inappropriate may be not the right words. Can I say that?
Yeah.
That it would have been, no, this space doesn't contain the components to invoke God in this space. Maybe it's more that than it is not appropriate or, you know, a judgment on it. But maybe something...
Let's say you're trying to...
metaphysically is not happening.
That's the whole point is right there, is that it's inappropriate to the functioning of the invocational space you're trying to maintain or create. So if you go into a space and, you know, you say... I don't know. You just do something that's not in harmony with the focus that you're trying to maintain for that moment, that day, that week.
Maybe you're saying the first two lines of the quatrain or of the prayer.
I think that's what Marx probably experimented with. Is he does that? You create a channel in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
Here's another thing. I expect that after this, I'm going to go do a little errand. When I do that errand, I also know that I will carry a certain energy with me, and that will clear the space. You understand?
Yes, because I'm thinking that now what we're saying is if we can maintain the energy.
Yes.
Of this prayer within us, and we carry it, we can carry that to another space with us, then we can maybe create the conditions then and there to work with that.
And people
to have that happen.
People fall into the space too. They allow this.
Perhaps because of us.
There's no question it's because of us. And I love, many, many, many years ago, we did all kinds of survival training. I don't know, you probably remember. And we did paint gun wars. But EJ came up with a brilliant phrase, which has worked for me throughout. And he says, competent to avoid conflict. Competent to avoid conflict. So you go into the space, you don't conflict with somebody, but you know how to move around it if you need to.
David, if I recall, can it be possible that what you are talking about here about these aberrations is we have seen this situation when we start studying octaves in the fragmentations?
Yes.
In the ideas in the vocational discourse, remember things that were off time, that we need to, it would fragment the dialogue. Remember that?
I'm not sure what you're referring to, Simon. Can you expand a little bit?
It says, I'm going to refer now, this we saw this concept of what I guess you are describing in the beginning of the octaves through the retardations, remember how the ideas are being presented. And sometimes they say we may in the course of an ordinary conversation think of our ideas as important expressions of our inner self. But
yes.
To present that kind of a thing, it will send us in a totally different fragmented dialogue that is unnecessary.
Very good. Very well put. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Okay.
That you pay more attention to the quality of the space rather than the external outcome of whatever might be occurring.
Right.
Okay.
Or that you hope to occur.
If you have a wish or hope for how it should occur,
mm-hmm.
if you bring that to the space
too,
because it's possible to not bring that to the space and be in it and see what unfolds, and particularly when you're in complex situations like. You're just starting a new job, complex situation. can you maintain your presence in that? Or out of fear, do you wind up going back to your human biological machine and say, oh, this kind of fear worked really well for me before, I'll go back to it? Or can you allow yourself to be in presence first? That's courage. That's a moment of courage. And in a moment of courage, stuff happens that you just wouldn't expect. And that's when we begin to see what I call true heroic acts. All of this, the big, you know, mythologies that we hear about, I consider those internal stories. And if you read, like, for instance, the Odyssey, and you have Odysseus going through all of these challenges, just flip it and think of it, what was the inner challenge that the individual went through? So, there you have it. By the way, we didn't even get to open chapter 13 because for some reason. Here we are. And
but prayer absolute is so such an important concept.
It is in
use.
I Vadir and Pathworld wrote a wonderful summary of the chapter 13, which you can see on wingsofchaos.com. You see that, and they did a great job. Take a look at what they have to say, and next week we'll get directly into the book, into the chapter, directly, right into the chapter, like in the chapter, and we'll then avail ourselves of their wonderful work that they did on the summary. So, take a read of chapter 13 again, and look at it from a number of different points of view. There's a pragmatic discussion of food and so on and so forth, but look at it in a number of different ways. So how are we doing, Simon? Any other comments that we need to read before we sign off?
There are some comments that were always in reference to the how it works with the first line or the second line. I guess Mark Roach is doing a reference here that how the first line comes to him, and then when he practiced with that one, the second line will come to him spontaneously.
Okay.
That was in reference that you say that the prayers start coming back to you.
Yes.
At the angel, the same thing happens to him, an experience. One line led to the next. And that's basically what has been the dialogue about.
It's important to share your experiences, because we are like the seekers after the truth. We're individuals in different modalities, and suddenly we come together for a couple, an hour or so on Wednesday night, and we share the fruits of our work. When I hear that from Mark Roach, I'm inspired now to look in a different way at how the thing works. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and then Pian just says, yeah, that's how it works for me too. So, as we share one to another, all of us go up. All of us go up 1 inch. Okay? So, that's it. So, thanks for coming again for this evening, and we'll meet again next week, Wednesday at 7 o'clock, and pursue the rest of the beginnings of Chapter 13 in The Hidden Work by E.J. Gold. Good night.
Good night, David. Bye, May.